Okay. Good morning, everyone. For those who don't know me, my name is Dave, and we're in our final sermon for our mission series. Thanks, Kim, for reading through that passage. You're right, great baby names coming out of that one. You know, we're all looking forward to the arrival of Asyncritus Town, whenever that might be. But we'll get to that passage in a second. For the kids, there are some like colouring in and worksheet things down the back. So, a sort of older primary kids, there's one on the table, and then along the back sort of pew, there's some colouring in and connect the dot worksheets there for them to kind of follow along with us. But in our mission series, we've been working our way through over the last few weeks. We've seen God as a God on mission, who is seeking and saving the lost, creating a people to be his people, to be with him. Ultimately, that great saving work of Jesus dying for our sins on the cross, rising again so that we might be forgiven and reconciled and brought into God's family. And that mission continues. God at work in the world by his Spirit through the church, through his people who he sends to proclaim the good news of Jesus. And we've seen that that requires going out, crossing boundaries, going to people perhaps not like us who don't know Jesus so that they can hear. And we've seen that sometimes that is difficult. It requires sacrifice, but Jesus leads us in his victory, not our victory, but in his victory as he does his saving work in the world by his gospel, by his Spirit at work as we take the message out. And for our last message in this series, what I want to focus on is the fact that all of us participate in this mission. It kind of used to be the idea, I suppose, that especially for us in Australia, we kind of live in a Christian sort of place. And so mission is sending people from here to go overseas to places where people hadn't heard about Jesus so that they could be missionaries, you know, and take the gospel out. And absolutely, sending people out to gospel poor and, you know, unreached places still continues today as it rightly should. If you saw anything in the news, newspaper, anything about recent census data, the sort of trend is continuing as those in Australia who say no religion as their kind of religious identity is growing, those who would claim to be Christians continues to diminish, probably just reflecting the reality of who is, you know, those people who would be committedly Christian. And so the mission field, and we've known this for many years, the mission field isn't just over there, it's all around us and over there and, you know, just down the road and all of that. So it's no longer just a sending base and missionary outpost kind of idea, but we know that there are those around us, even those closest to us right in our families who don't know Jesus, who need to know, who we can be sharing with, who are an immediate kind of mission field, right next to us and down the street and at our works and all of these kinds of places. If God is a missionary God and we're his people, then he has called us all to be a part of his mission with him. One of the kind of images of the church that we find in the New Testament is that of the body, and we're all different parts of the body. We all play our role. We all participate. And as we know, in our own bodies, when one part isn't working, If one part's not doing what it's kind of meant to do, then the rest of the body has to compensate, often in an uncomfortable or awkward kind of way. It's really noticeable. And like that, the church in God's mission, you know, every member, every one of us, has a role to play, whether it's public and noticeable and sort of and vocal or whatever, or whether it's in the background, whether it's supportive, whether it's quiet, whatever it might be. Every single part of the body needs to be and has the opportunity to be participating in God's mission. Now, Kim read through that Romans 16 passage for us. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time in this passage, but I just wanted to highlight, you know, we often think about Paul as like the the missionary par excellence, the kind of great missionary of early Christianity, who travels around the Mediterranean. He proclaims the gospel in the marketplaces and in the synagogues and all this kind of stuff. Lots of people come to faith. Churches are founded in a whole bunch of cities. We read through Acts and we go, isn't kind of Paul's ministry amazing? And yes, that's true. It is unique apostolic kind of ministry that Paul does. But what we see in Romans 16 is really clear evidence that Paul, when he thinks about his own mission, doesn't think that he's just doing it by himself. But there's a whole crowd of people who have participated in his ministry along the way. And we see different kinds of descriptions of these various people. Phoebe, for example, who is probably a wealthy person who has been able to use her wealth to be a patron of Paul, kind of support him financially, but also perhaps, you know, supporting people in the sort of local church where she is near Corinth, and has the ability to kind of help facilitate mission and ministry because of her wealth and sort of status. You have a variety of people who are called workers, co-workers, laborers, you know, people who are in the grind of ministry, doing all sorts of, you know, we don't really get much detail about what their sort of roles are, but they're alongside Paul, sort of shoulder to shoulder in the ministry. We have whole families or households who are known for their faith, and people like Aristobulus and Narcissus are the kind of heads of these households, who are known in the church or in the community as being a household that is contributing particularly to mission. Perhaps these were people who hosted Paul as he was in various places. We have, where is she? Rufus's mother, you know, we sort of greet Rufus, and also his mother, who has been a mother to me as well, a mature woman in the Lord who has had some kind of, again, what does that look like? But Paul has been impacted by, encouraged by, supported by, cared for by Rufus's mother along his missionary journey. You know, there's a whole crowd of people who Paul can identify and say, this person I've worked alongside, this person I've worked alongside, this person has supported me, this person has cared for me, to enable this mission and ministry all around the Mediterranean that establishes establishes the Christian faith in so many cities around the Roman world. I thought, as I was kind of reading through this and thinking about this sort of sermon for us today, I thought about what it would look like if we individually kind of wrote, you know, if I'm called to be on mission with Jesus, who are the sort of crowd of people that I've been ministering alongside of? You know, we could say, you know, here at Rosalie we have those who are sharing the gospel with our children. You know, we have Des and Liz and Julie and Becky and our sort of kids' church teachers. We've had pastoral interns who ministered to us while they were with us and then were sent out from us, you know, Carl, Ben, Dan, Nico, and more, you know, others. There have been those who have been here at Rosalie before me and have labored faithfully over many years, like, you know, Glenn and Marilyn and Mike and Sue. People have been involved in the mission, in the ministry of Rosalie Baptist for a long time, faithfully. We've had pastors and elders have ministered the word to us. Joe and Ben and Pete and Russell and Josh and Johnny. And we've had people who have come, who've been sort of brought to us because of their work and taken away by their work, and we sort of joyfully minister alongside them and sadly send them away, but knowing that they will go and participate in ministry and support ministry and mission elsewhere. This great sort of crowd of people over the years who have participated in the gospel mission of Rosalie Baptist and elsewhere, and we're all part of it. You know, everyone a member of this gospel mission that God is working both here and elsewhere. Now, in this list in Romans 16, Paul mentions a couple, Priscilla and Aquila, or Prisca and Aquila, as it is in Romans, and he calls them my fellow workers in Christ Jesus, who risked their necks for my life, to whom not only I give thanks, but all the churches of the Gentiles give thanks as well. What I want to do with the rest of the sermon is look at Priscilla and Aquila, because they're not our great apostolic missionaries like Paul, who Paul has a kind of unique sort of call on his life, but they are much more like you and me, sort of caught up in the mix of mission and ministry and so on. And as we look at their life, as we sort of get it in Acts 18 and a bit in 1 Corinthians, we see a variety of ways that they're drawn into mission and participate in mission. And we will kind of pick out, you know, what do we see is how God moves them into mission and how they sort of participate in what Paul's doing and so on. And so we can think about that, you know, as we are all on mission, what might that look like for us, or how might that, you know, relate to us? So we're going to jump out of Romans 16 and go to Acts chapter 18, which is where we sort of first meet Priscilla and Aquila, right at the beginning of the chapter. And the four points, or four kind of subheadings, and the older primary kids, if you've got that worksheet thing down on the bottom left box, it has the sort of beginning letters of the words for these four points. So listen in. But we're going to look at how this sort of mission of God in Priscilla and Aquila's life in relation to, firstly, movement and migration. So movement and migration. Secondly, work. Thirdly, discipleship. And then fourthly, hospitality. So movement and migration, work, discipleship, and hospitality. Kids, if you don't know how to spell those words, don't worry about it. Just write them how you think they sound. Okay. But let's have a look at this. So Acts 18, I'll read verses 1 to 4 first, and we'll come back to them. Okay, so after this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth, and he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. And he went to see them. And because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked, for they were tent makers by trade. And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and tried to persuade Jews and Greeks. Okay, Priscilla and Aquila. At the outset, I think it's unclear whether Priscilla and Aquila are Christian Jews or are just are Jewish but not yet Christians in this first kind of instance. But very quickly, they're in contact with Paul, and by the end of the kind of Corinth episode, they're traveling with Paul and getting involved in ministry with Paul. So whether they were we're Christians at the beginning or not is unclear. But what we have is that they've been moved to Corinth right kind of at the time when Paul is coming to Corinth because they're kicked out of Rome. There's been a sort of problem in Rome, and Claudius the emperor has said, no, all of the Jews need to get out. And there's a Roman historian who talks about there being this uproar amongst the Jews over a certain Crestus, and the likely thing is that there's conflict between the Christian Jewish sort of community and the not Christian Jewish community, and Claudius just goes, all of you Jewish people just get out of here, you know, like rack off, and so they're kicked out, but. That isn't the first kind of move that Aquila has done, at least. He's a native of Pontus, which is over near the Black Sea, kind of North Turkey area. He was then in, you know, Italy with his wife Priscilla in Rome, and then he gets kicked out of there. You know, it's not by his choice, not by their choice that they leave Rome, but they're forced out. At the end of this kind of episode, you know, in verse 18, after Paul's been in Corinth for a number of years, so Priscilla and Aquila have been in Corinth for a number of years, they head off. They go to Ephesus. Possibly, you know, they're just going to continue and do their work sort of thing over there, but they get involved in the church there as well. They go, sort of go on to mission. So they end up moving anyway to go and do ministry, not quite like Paul moves around everywhere, but we do see them shifting around between different places. But what, for us, when we think about mission, when we think about life, often, you know, being forced to move, often we perceive as a negative thing, as a frustrating thing. You know, this can be really extreme for some, where it's persecution or it's war in places of causing people to flee, to become refugees, to be displaced people, and you're forced away from your house to go. And for Priscilla and Aquila, you know, this is what's happening because they're being turfed out, you know, being turfed out by Claudius. This is not part of their 10-year plan, perhaps. For some of the people who have been a part of our church, they have, you know, kind of come here because of work, and then the work is finished up, and they need to find a new job, or their job is kind of saying, no, we're not going to keep you there anymore, you need to go. And that movement has been a sad thing of going, oh, well, we wanted to stay, but we couldn't stay. And now we need to go back to America or back to Sydney or back to wherever, you know. And there's been a number of people over our last few years that we've, you know, kind of loved and farewelled. That can be a frustrating thing. For some of us, you know, you might be studying or you might be soon to be heading into university or whatever it might be, and soon your job might require that you have to go somewhere else. Sometimes it's things like family needs that draw us away, that, you know, we need to go and be with our elderly, failing sort of parents or whatever it might be, and we had a sort of plan, but this family requirement is more pressing and we need to go and move. These kinds of relocations can be daunting or can be undesired. You know, perhaps they feel necessary, like a kind of necessary evil. But as we look at the life of Priscilla and Aquila, this kind of unfortunate thing, this undesired, you know, expulsion out of Rome, moves them into God's mission, moves them into participating in a new way, at least, in God's mission. They didn't necessarily want to go to Corinth, but God moves them there. A few years down the track, Paul's saying these people were kind of crucial to the ministry. They risked their necks for me. And so their movement there becomes important and significant. The disruption and relocation, you know, movement and migration. You know, in the sort of classic idea of mission, we always think, well, mission means going somewhere. But usually we think about it like that in terms of, well, I'm deciding to go somewhere for the purpose of mission, and I'm going to join a mission agency, I'm going to get support, I'm going to do all the thing to make that a definite sort of and decided choice. But we see in the life of Priscilla and Aquila, no, sometimes we just get moved places without necessarily wanting to. Perhaps, you know, it's a necessity or whatever it might be. And our passage, I think, our picture of the life of Priscilla and Aquila encourage us to think, yes, this may be disruption, but is it us being derailed from God's mission? And the answer is no. It can be getting sort of reassigned to a new place. You know, and you know, perhaps for you, that movement has already happened and you've kind of landed here at Rosalie and you're feeling a little bit discombobulated or whatever, and you're going, well, I didn't expect myself to be here now. I expected to be somewhere else. I expected to be in a different stage of my career. I expected to be in a different situation family-wise, whatever it might be, but you're here and you're with us and ministry is happening here. And don't hold back from participating in the mission because you're thinking, well, I wanted to be somewhere else. But you can look around for the opportunities where God has put you and find how he has moved you into his mission here. Okay, so movement or migration, even if it's against our will or against our plan, doesn't pull us out of God's mission, but it moves us into it. So Priscilla and Aquila, they arrived in Corinth. Paul arrives in Corinth, and it turns out that that these three are all tent makers or leather workers. They all work in the same trade. Now Paul's by himself. His buddies have sort of gone back up into Macedonia, like Philippi and Thessalonica, those cities up there. He was in Athens by himself for a bit, and he's come to Corinth and needs some work so that he can eat. You know, Priscilla and Aquila seem to have the resources or whatever to set up this business, this leather working, tent making business, and so Paul can work alongside them. And so he works with them through the week, and then on the Sabbath, you know, on the Saturday, goes into the synagogue and he's preaching the gospel. He's doing his mission stuff. He's doing his ministry stuff. So here we come to our second kind of point that we're drawing out about work. Work being an opportunity to support and serve. Of course, your workplace could be an opportunity for evangelism, for sharing the good news of Jesus with the people around you. Yes. And perhaps that's what happened with Paul and Priscilla and Aquila. You know, he's working alongside them because they're all Jews. They have the same trade, and he's like, you know what, can I tell you about the Messiah? And they're convinced. Or perhaps they're already Christians already. Again, I said we don't really know. But so that's a possibility. But for Priscilla and Aquila, their business, their small business, becomes an opportunity to support a missionary. You know, Paul's in need, he's in Corinth by himself, he needs to eat, and so this opportunity arises that their work enables Paul to do his kind of every Sabbath gospel ministry while he's working through the week. I'm not sure with everybody here what kinds of roles we're in with our work. But one way to be participating in mission as a business owner or as a manager, the person who gets to choose about hiring and employment and things like that, is it possible for you to be able to offer work to ministry workers, to missionaries, to Bible college students, whatever it might be, in a way that enables their ministry rather than kind of drawing them away from it? I suppose, for the person who is who is the business owner, can you look at your work as a tool which you can use, your business as a tool which you can use to help ministry workers put food on the table while they're going about their word ministry? But for Priscilla and Aquila, their work also enables them to do more moving and getting around the place. You know, in Acts 18, verse 18, when Paul moves on and Priscilla and Aquila go with him, and in verse 19, they come to Ephesus. He left them there, as in Paul doesn't stay at Ephesus in his first little stop, but Priscilla and Aquila stay there. And he himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. But it seems likely that Priscilla and Aquila, they've had their sort of tent-making business in Rome, probably, and then their tent-making business in Corinth. And whether these are all sort of continuing and linked, or whether they've sort of shut up shop and then they go over to Ephesus and they set themselves up over there, but their work is enabling them to move around. You know, their work is enabling them to go and participate, and they end up with like a house church, you know, in Ephesus. We'll see a little bit more of their ministry in Ephesus. But their work is giving them the opportunity to go to places that require gospel ministry. Is it possible, when we think about our kind of career, our work career, how can we, I guess, turn it upside down or turn it on its side or something like that, where I think as Christians, we want to be good at our jobs, we want to do the best sort of work that we can do, but can we include in our considerations there, how might my work enable me to go somewhere to support further gospel ministry? Can my work enable me to go somewhere that is gospel poor and do ministry there? Perhaps that is, you know, via a kind of mission agency, and you go and be a teacher in a place and it's sort of all established for you. Or perhaps you're in the kind of work that they can say, well, we've got an office in Singapore, we've got an office in, you know, Dubai or whatever it might be, and you can just kind of go with your work and then find a local church and participate and contribute and be a part of ministry there. You know, this is sort of a proactive looking at moving and going places. But it might be, you know, if you're a teacher, to think, well, where are the places where I could where could teaching enable me to go, or where could nursing enable me to go, where I can go and help to think missionally? I can go and contribute to the mission of the church in this place, whether it's in like regional Queensland or whether it's overseas or whether it's wherever it might be. Can I teach in a Christian school and look at mission that way? I'm just thinking personal examples here with teaching, by the way, but Other kinds of work will open up different sorts of opportunities, but not to think I'm gonna work in my career to get sort of ahead, to be kind of comfortable, to live the nice Australian dream sort of life. But how might my work enable me to sort of participate, to contribute in the mission of God in Australia, in Brisbane, or around somewhere further? So, movement and migration, work, we see in the life of Priscilla and Aquila, enabling them to participate in the mission of God. As we keep going on, we've sort of jumped out of Corinth and they're over in Ephesus now, and we see an interesting interaction with a chap named Apollos. If we go down to chapter 18, verses 24, we have now a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was an eloquent man, competent in the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he spoke and taught accurately the things concerning Jesus, though he knew only the baptism of John. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue, but when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. And when he wished to cross to Achaia, the brothers encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. When he arrived, he greatly helped those who through grace had believed, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public, showing by the scriptures that the Christ was Jesus. Okay, so we have Apollos, this eloquent, kind of dynamic, good speaker, impressive, sort of knowledgeable dude. We see, if you read Corinthians, you see how Apollos is sort of well regarded by the church in Corinth, even sort of people going, well, we follow Apollos, and others saying, well, we follow Paul, you know, that kind of thing. But he's fervent, he's passionate, he's dynamic, all of these kinds of things, but he's not properly around the gospel. He gets the events of Jesus, you know, the things concerning Jesus, but he doesn't know about the Spirit and what that means for the believers. And we see Priscilla and Aquila draw alongside him and correct him and teach him so that he knows the way of God more accurately. This is our third point, by the way, discipleship. We have Priscilla and Aquila. They see this person who is clearly, sort of intelligent, willing, able to do that kind of upfront, to do that ministry of the word, to do that public engagement, to do that evangelistic, missionary kind of work. But this guy is a little bit ill-informed, he's missing the mark, and so they draw alongside him and they train him up. They help inform him. They teach him more fully so that he can do this thing that he's so kind of gifted or passionate, all that kind of stuff, to kind of do. It's, we see that they're not threatened by his dynamism, his ability. They don't try and just kind of push him out the door because he hasn't got it right. But no, they walk alongside him and they help train him up, help equip him, help develop him for ministry. Older Christians who are here, mature Christians who are here, you can be doing this kind of thing, looking for people who are younger or perhaps less mature, newer in the faith than you, to come and join with, to disciple, to encourage, to read the scriptures with, to talk about the scriptures with, bring along to a Bible study or just one-on-one kind of reading the Bible, that kind of thing. But also, this is something that we've been doing as a church, where we welcome in pastoral interns or other people who have been more deliberately pursuing ministry and mission, and we've welcomed them and encouraged them and supported them as they've worked kind of closely with the pastors and elders in order to prepare them and send them out. We've had a number of interns come in and go out, in a variety of ways. And we can look around Southeast Queensland and go, oh, we know that guy over there at that church and this person here and that person there. And we've been able to encourage them. There are ways we can do this practically, whether it's the discipleship sort of thing, reading the word, discussing theology, all that kind of thing. It can be practical, paying for training, paying for conferences and things like that to help people get there, making meals or whatever it might be as people are kind of going through college and lower income or whatever it might be, practical sort of support to help raise up and train and send out people for mission. A number of our interns, of course, have sort of come from outside our church to come and be with us for a while and then go. It would be awesome if we had people in our, for people in our church to be then looking at mission and ministry and so on, to be raised up and supported and trained and sent out. That would be so good. And when we look at what Priscilla and Aquila do here, you know, they don't push Apollos aside because he hasn't got it right or because he's sort of a dynamic and sort of threatening kind of dude. But also, when they've trained him up, they don't just go, hey, Apollos, you should stay here. We could do something amazing. You know, we're here in Ephesus, big city. You know, why don't we grow what we've got going on here? We'd love to have you with us. You're such a good sort of preacher or whatever. No, he says, you know, I think I've got to go over to Achaia, over to Greece. And the church in Ephesus all go, all right, we're with you. Let us write you a letter of recommendation. We've got friends of, you know, Priscilla and Aquila. They're like, yeah, we've got friends in Corinth. We were there for a couple of years. We know them. We'll tell them about you. And we're going to encourage you and help you go. We're not going to just cling on to you because we're sort of afraid of that we might miss out on something here, but we're going to be willing to encourage and send and provide and support and connect you with the people that you need to be connected with over there. You know, that parting might have been sad for them, but they encourage and send in that attitude of willing support to send people into God's mission. As a church here at Rosalie, we want to have that attitude, loving everyone who is here with us and being willing to send when God moves them on, when God sends them on, when they're raised up and sent out for the sake of the mission. I think one thing that we see in the life of Priscilla and Aquila is a semi-rootedness, where they're in a variety of different places. They sort of uproot and go and then set their roots again. So we see them doing, I won't spend too much time on hospitality, that fourth kind of point, but we see them having church in their house. They welcome people, they draw alongside people, they get involved in the church where they are, but then there's after they're in Ephesus, they're perhaps back in Rome again, and then even later they're kind of back in Ephesus again. They move around a little bit. There's a bit of a sort of dynamism in their career or whatever's going on. But when they are in a place, they are invested and they're participating and they're raising people up and kind of sending them out. And this idea of, you know, if our earthly home is not our ultimate home, then any sort of earthly location where we find ourselves is not our sort of ultimate location necessarily. It might be, you know, maybe we'll be in the one place for a very long time, but perhaps we'll be uprooted and moved for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of God's mission, and that's okay. We know that we will be eternally with Christ, and so while we are here and we have a job to do, we have a mission to participate in, we can be willing to encourage, to raise up, to send people out, to go, to use our work, to use our house, to use opportunities for movement for the sake of the gospel. Okay, we might wrap this up. But we've had a look at, we started thinking about the body and thinking about this group of co-workers that Paul could list, all of these people who have participated in Christ's mission, in Paul's mission. And the call for us as God's people is to participate in the mission of God through, we get drawn into this. We've seen a variety of things in the example of Priscilla and Aquila, whether it's by movement and migration, whether you've moved here to Rosalie, whether in the next couple of years you're going to get moved on to somewhere else, whether by choice or against your will, you can participate in the mission, and we must continue to join in God's mission. We have work as an opportunity, a context for sharing the gospel, but also a way that we might support gospel workers, or perhaps a way for us to go as gospel workers. We want to look for opportunities to disciple, encourage others, raise them up, support them, train them, send them out, proactively. You know, we support missionaries as part of our church. It's what we do. And we want to raise up missionaries. We want to send out missionaries. We want to train up and raise up and send out pastors and things like that. This act of discipleship. And we didn't really get into hospitality, but being able to open our houses, using our current sort of normal everyday context of our house, of our relationships with parent, you know, families from school, people from work, catching up for coffee or whatever, doing all sorts of things where we use our resources that we have, not just for ourselves, but for the sake of connecting with others as well. After I pray, we're going to sing a few more songs, and what I want to encourage you to do is spend some of that time while we sing considering our mission series as a whole, but particularly some of what I hope has been kind of practical things that we've drawn out of the life of Priscilla and Aquila about how we engage in mission, and how this touches on your life, where God has got you at the moment. You know, whether you've been moved around or you know that movement is happening. You know, what your work looks like and what opportunities it provides for you to participate in mission. Who there is around you that you can be drawing alongside and encouraging in mission, supporting in mission or ministry. How you might practically meet their needs, perhaps. And also your own household. How might you open up your life and home for the sake of gospel mission? So as we sing, I'm going to ask the team to come back up. As we sing, think about those things, pray about those things. Perhaps after we finish an over morning tea, talk to someone and say, you know, one thing that I thought about while we were singing, thinking about mission, is this opportunity that I see, or this experience of being sort of forced movement, whatever it might be.